Kind of officially. It's the first full team practice. He's an outstanding writer for NFL.com. He is Nick Shook. Nick, good morning, bud.
Hey, Daryl. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. How fired up are you for Browns Camp 2025 in the four-barrel quarterback competition?
Fired up is one way to put it. Intrigued. Ready to see the madness, I suppose, and see how this all shakes out. Fascinated probably more than anything just by how a team can navigate a situation like this. We just don't see these very often, especially without one clear-cut starter or some sort of long-term future plan in place. So, yeah, excited to see how it shakes out just because I would like those in Cleveland and those who, you know, support the Browns to get some sort of understanding of, you know, where this team is headed at the most important position.
Best way to pick the quarterback: flip coins, draw straws, or pick a name out of a hat?
Pin the tail of the donkey.
It's a better answer.
It's new. We should try that, probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we haven't gone wrong with that one yet. So I can't necessarily knock that, right? It could work. You never
know. I like it.
Can you legitimately, Nick, have a four quarterback battle in a training camp, or is this more of a two separate two quarterback battles that the Browns are going to have?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, unless, you know, one of the youngsters blows them away. I mean, you get a lot of time, but we're not in the days of two-a-days anymore, really. You know, don't get me wrong, these camp days are long. And, you know, whether it's on-field work or, you know, stuff in meetings and guys going through walkthroughs late at night, you know, before the next session of practices and everything else, there are ways to make gains. But with the limited amount of reps that they work with now under the, you know, the CBA agreement and everything else that they've kind of negotiated over the years to make this portion a little bit, you know, easier on their bodies, you know, understandably so to a degree, you just don't have as many reps. But I mean, it's more than you're going to get in season. So I guess there's some way to, you know, reveal a little bit about these guys. It's really about intent. You know, do you go into camp knowing that you know what Joe Flacco is and you need to see it from Kenny Pickett, but you really want to know between these two rookie quarterbacks who might be the better one? Or do you go in with the idea that you are trying to figure out your order of four, which, by the way, I think could realistically be an order of four and not three. And, you know, you cut one at the end of camp or you try to hide them on the practice squad or that sort of thing. I think that if you go with the latter, you could kind of reveal a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, in the way that we look at a quarterback competition and we think about reps and everything else, there's just not enough to go around to really get a good look at all four.
If you were in Kevin Stefanski's shoes or Tommy Reese's or Andrew Berry's, what would you do with that spot and these four guys? Would you keep all four after the cutdown day and maybe see if you can go a week or two with them? Or would you try and pare things down before you get to that preseason finale and you ultimately make a decision who your starter is going to be?
Well, with no disrespect to Joe Flacco, I would try to turn this into a three-man competition and try to weed somebody out relatively early to get it down to a two-man competition so that I don't have to keep all four, so that I can have that extra roster spot to use elsewhere. And I think, honestly, you know, when they drafted Dillon Gabriel, when they moved up to get him, that was the idea. It's just that Shador ended up being available still in the fifth round, and, you know, what's the risk of a fifth-round pick on a guy like that? So I would try to, you know, work it down to three, or I would at least keep my eyes, you know, peeled for, you know, potential injuries elsewhere and you know, if you want to move one of these guys or not. But, like, if you think about long-term planning and you think about, you know, where Joe Flacco is right now, you know what he is. There's nothing to learn about Joe Flacco other than, do you still have enough in the tank to play, which is kind of debatable based on how he played in Indianapolis last year. What you don't know is, where is Kenny Pickett? Can he be a guy that can handle a starting job? You know, he's still young. Is he a guy with a future, or do we need to figure out what we have in these two rookies? But you kind of have to move one aside to figure out who you have in the rest of the other three with the idea that, all right, let's not hold all four on the roster going into, you know, week one of the season.
Nick, what needs to happen between now and the end of the regular season for us to be having a conversation talking about, you know what, maybe the Browns didn't necessarily find a franchise quarterback, but this year at that specific spot can be viewed as a success?
That's a great question, because in this all or nothing business that is the NFL, you either discover that you have the guy or you don't. I mean, if you look at Pickett's time in Pittsburgh, it took him a few years for them to realize that they didn't want him. You know, he had his flashes, his moments, he had his concussions, he had his other injuries. And I mean, I remember talking to, you know, a Steelers assistant going into the 2023 season and saying that, you know, this has got to be the year for him. This is it. Like, this has got to be the year for him. No, in fact, it was going into last year. And then, you know, a few days later, they parted with him entirely and went for Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. So, figuring that out, I think, would be considered a success. If you could, you know, figure out if he's going to be anything more than a career backup, which I lean toward him being a career backup, it would be a great success if you could get some sort of proof out of Dillon Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders that you have a guy who could at least compete for a starting job going into 2026. And if you get none of that out of all of this, it would be a success if they were just competitive enough to be worth watching on Sunday, no matter who's playing quarterback among those four.
NFL.com's Nick Shook joining us on the fan hotline. Nick, with the Quinshon Judkins situation, do they need to bring in another running back here?
Yeah, I mean, they threw a lot at the position going into this season, and understandably so, because it's been a revolving door at the position for the last 2 years, ever since Nick Chubb really got hurt in that week 2 game against Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. I liked the way it looked on paper going into camp with all these options. I would not mind if they kicked the tires on somebody else, just because, I mean, you pretty much know what you have in Jerome Ford. You know who Pierre Strong is. Dylan Sampson is now the one that makes, you know, you're kind of curious about what's going to go up with him, because, you know, he is a draft pick. He was a guy who was a productive runner at Tennessee, but the not having Judkins in the fold, yeah, it feels like there's a void. So I would, if I were them, I would at least explore the option of another running back. But I would also caution to say, Browns fans who are still upset about Nick Chubb not signing there, that was probably never going to happen. Don't get upset about that. But yeah, I would consider another running back.
As the Browns look to return to their old offense that Kevin Stefanski brought here in 2020, and you look at what that running game looked like when this Browns era was at its peak, and you look at maybe who could replicate that, what names do you think of as running backs that are potentially available that could come in and maybe make some slight impact in that room?
Running backs who are available is a little bit trickier of a question, because it's a position that, you know, we see a lot of committee backfields in the NFL, and then we see the handful of stars in the NFL, and you kind of don't really get anything in between. I mean, I think about guys like, you know, Aaron Jones, who actually did pretty well in Minnesota last year, but I think more about the Dalvin Cooks, the one cut guys. And yet, you know, it's when it comes to the current state of the league, it's, you know, you just throw a certain amount of, you know, a certain guy back there, and then, you know, he has some success. So I don't know if I can say off the top of my head, you know, among the available running backs who would fit best, but I would definitely look for the one cut guys that, you know, you're going to run that bit of a wide zone. You're going to build out a play action. You just need him to kind of, you know, sift through the defense, hit the one cut and go. Then, you know, I would keep an eye on one guy, Dalvin's younger brother, James Cook, in Buffalo, because it seems like Buffalo doesn't really appreciate him very much and haven't really, you know, participated in contract extension talks with him and have been pretty, you know, obvious that they don't really want to do that at the position. He's still under contract this year, but long-term, if everything works out and this entire regime doesn't change in Cleveland, I'd keep an eye on him.
Is Mason Graham one of the most or least talked about top five picks in recent memory?
Yeah, right behind the most least talked about number one pick in recent memory in Cam Ward. And that's what happens when a team trades up to 2 to draft Travis Hunter. And, you know, when you have the collection of other players in this draft, this is going to be a weird draft. We already kind of knew that going in, that it wasn't a great draft overall. I think that a lot of the steam that would come with the fifth overall pick in a town like Cleveland was kind of eliminated when they traded back from 2 to 5 to spend that pick and didn't draft Hunter, which I think we'd heard a lot of people convincing themselves over multiple weeks that that's who they wanted them to take, and, you know, so on and so forth. But I don't think it was a terrible move. I think it was the smart move, because Travis Hunter, as my friend at Sports Illustrated, Connor Orr, described very astutely right after the pick. Travis Hunter is a great football experiment, and I think that that football experiment did not need to take place within the current state of the Cleveland Browns organization. I think that the Browns did themselves a favor by trading back, getting the extra first-round pick next year, and avoiding all the spotlight and attention that comes with having Travis Hunter, because I don't think that they're necessarily built to maximize his talents on both or either side of the ball right now. And Jacksonville can be the one to take that risk. And there's a domino effect there that affects Cam Ward, it affects Mason Graham, and it affects the excitement for a player who is playing a position that typically isn't very glamorous. But I think Browns fans are going to be really pleased with him over time. I do. I think it was a smart decision, and they'll be really pleased next year to have that extra first-round pick, too.
Do you think that just as far as football goes, we should be talking more about Cam Ward after being the number one overall pick?
Absolutely. It kind of mystifies me, to be honest with you. Other than the way that I just explained it is the only way that I can kind of make sense of it. But, you know, this is also part of the fact that he's playing in Tennessee, that, you know, even unless they're absolutely amazing, the Titans are a team that struggles to make national headlines. They just are. You know, they were the number one seed in the AFC a few years ago, and they lose at home the divisional round to Joe Burrow's Bengals on their way to the Super Bowl, and it feels like nobody's talked about them since then. And they had some good teams over the years, but they're just not a super, you know, I don't know if I would like to say super marketable, but they're just not one of the legacy franchises. They're not one that commands a lot of attention outside of the Nashville area. So the fact that they got the number one overall pick, who is not overly expressive off the field, kind of a perfect marriage if you think about it, but it's a lack of, you know, a headline generator. It just, there's not enough attention paid to it, especially when the guy right after you is somebody who certainly commands a ton of attention. But Cam Ward, I think, is going to steady this franchise in Tennessee and be a good player, and if not a great player, and be exactly what they needed at quarterback. And we'll end up talking about him before long, because you can't ignore, you know, successful football players in the NFL for very long.
Nick, the Browns going to unveil their third helmet. It's most likely going to be brown. We saw the whatever that was, the Bane uniforms the Steelers put out. The Saints now have a gold jersey. Are we getting to a point where the uniform things start to jump the shark here, not just in the NFL, but in pro sports in general?
No, Daryl, you're such a throwback. No, I'm just kidding.
I hate on everything. I'm a wet blanket.
I hate everything. Look, it's kind of weird, to be honest. You know, because college football is what kicked off the whole obsession with football uniforms and how creative you could get. And it was Oregon. And before you knew it, Texas Tech had this crazy uniform. And everybody did. Before long, everybody did. You know, even Ohio State ends up rolling out an all-gray uniform, which I thought was fantastic. But if you look at the way that uniform trends have gone in the last, really the last 5 years, but I would say the last 2 to 3 years especially, and it starts in college, there's a lot of focus on going back to classic looks, going to what they call the modern retro or the modern classic, whatever they want to call it. The NFL, meanwhile, decided after years that the one shell rule wasn't necessary and that they could, you know, introduce alternate helmets. And at first it made sense because you're like, all right, well, now you can do throwbacks. That's really what makes sense. And then other teams just got creative with it and got kind of wacky with it and just rolled out whatever type of different helmet they wanted. And now it's kind of opened the floodgates to do all these different things with uniforms. Now, I am not upset about, you know, some of the ambitious endeavors and upon which the teams like the Chargers have embarked, or the Saints bringing back the gold jersey, which they've only worn once for one game in their history. But I think that the alternate helmet stuff has gone a little too far. The Jaguars white helmet, the Packers white helmet. The Packers don't need a white helmet. Not every team needs an alternate helmet, I think, or at least makes one just to make one. And so, yeah, I think we're getting to that point where we're gonna get some uniforms where we're gonna think, yeah, it probably shouldn't have gone that far. I'm a little curious, if not concerned, to see if the Browns end up in that group.
We'll see. We'll find out here in a matter of either minutes or hours what they came up with. Nick, you're the best as always. Really appreciate you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, there you go. He is Nick Shook from NFL.com.